edit that first part. Those of you that are here for the Stephen Downs session, you're in the right place. You may want to check your boarding pass. Stephen is one of the most influential writers and thinkers about some of the technologies and new media and the way that they're affecting education, and he's our keynote for tomorrow, so you may want to see that. It's going to be completely different stuff than what he's talking about today, I would imagine, or at least... It could be.
Could be.
Anyway, I think you'll enjoy today, and if you need anything, I'll be in and out of the room. If you need software downloaded or anything like that, let me know, and I'll get some assistance for you or help you myself. Stephen.
Okay, well, thanks, and welcome, everyone. And it's too bad about the lineup at the door there, but just isn't enough room here.
I'm kidding.
Look, this is pretty informal. And there's utterly no way at all that I'm going to talk for 6 hours. It's not going to happen. I wonder if they're... Oh, hi, video people. So basically what I've got is a plan. And you guys are all online, I assume, except for you, but you will be shortly. If you go to downs.jotspot.com, downs.jot.com, and that's where I put today's handout. I don't like using paper. And this is pretty much the plan, and you can scroll through it. I assume you're all getting it okay. Now, this plan was drafted without really a solid idea of where all of you guys are. And that's okay. The reason why I put it here rather than on a web page or even rather than on my own home page is because JotSpot, which is where this is a wiki, which means that if you don't like this plan, you can change this plan. And basically all you need to do, as you can see here, you can just edit the page. And now I'm not sure if it'll let more than one person edit at once. That's why I got in there first. And, you know, you just, you put whatever you want. Like that, for example. Hit save, and you've just changed this session. So use this page through the day to make changes to the plan, to add notes. I've forgotten a bunch of stuff that I'm sure I wanted to put on this page, so I'll be adding to this page as we go along, and you should add to this page. And by the end of the session, we will have some sort of resource there that'll be useful for all of us. Well, we have some sort of resource there now, because I have to put something up, because I don't want to start with a completely blank slate. So I figure what we'll do, and you guys can have a look at that and make any changes that you want. And of course, we'll continue to make changes throughout the morning. But we'll start, as I just changed it, with introductions, so I can find out a bit about who you are and where you're from. I assume you're all from Alaska, but hey, you never know until you ask, right? And then have a look at that schedule, see if that looks good to you, and we'll take it from there. How does that sound so far? All right, massive roars of approval. I like that. Okay, so.
It could be massive keystrokes of change, too.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, I mean, there's a certain risk, right, in putting the plan for the day's session on a wiki, but I embrace that risk because the main thing I want to say, too, is I'm here for you guys today, so if you don't like this, you want to talk about something else, Cuban politics, political economy, I'm all over it. So we can do a discourse on Kierkegaard this afternoon, no problem. But this is the plan for now. So let's do introductions anyways, and I'll start at the back of the room with the person who's not paying attention.
There's some problems with the second.
Okay, so give me the name and location. I know where most Alaskan cities are, which is good. The little towns can't be less so. Give me also an indication of how familiar you are with blogging, RSS, personal publishing, podcasting, all of that sort of stuff. So I sort of have an idea of where you're at.
I'm somewhat familiar with blogging.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll change by this afternoon. Okay. Next. Yeah.
Good morning. I'm Gary Jacobson. I'm teaching at Dixon.
Okay. So this is south for you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So nice warm day.
So, yeah, I'm a teacher. I'm using plugins in the classroom.
Nick Henderson, I am passing at my job as I'm a technology engineer at Georgetown Grant, Grant College of Education, and working with state school districts to help develop professional learning communities and community practice in schools. So I have been going to Washington since November, not a lot, and I have been having a bunch of colleagues to work with. I have just made a change in consciousness this week about I've already put you on my phone, but it's just
okay.
So I encourage you all to start using that tool to think about how I'm really fantastic. And I really want my own.
Oh, there you go. Okay. All right.
From
Island
Community
and Michigan. That tells me where it is.
We have a real tiny school district. We have 370 students. I'm just becoming, I'm not familiar with, but I've just discovered podcasting by looking in iTunes. So I got real excited about that topic. And I've looked at a few blogs, that was really interesting, but that's about the things that I've gotten.
Okay.
But I am familiar with Flickr.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll just remove that.
I'm Darla Brodigan, Grand Strait School District. And I'm out on the western coast of Alaska, and I don't believe no, I want to follow with me. Found a survey, and I announced it at our e-board meeting for our library, and everybody said, ooh, that sounds great. So I know that there'll be support. People will hopefully add to it again.
Sure.
And we're going to do school library lesson plans to teach things that are in Alaska that we do in Alaska for libraries. So.
Okay.
I'm Greg Johnson from the Salem School District, Darlis. We're in Unifleet. We're doing a lot with Wiki. We're revising curriculum. We're we have 5 or 6 different certain information for new teachers throughout acclimate to living in rural Alaska, to doing strategic planning to kids in classes doing their own wikis and they're participating in Wikipedia. We're starting to do podcasting. We've got some kids doing it. We've got some folks starting to do it for staff development now. We're starting to get a lot more people through RSS feeds. And blogging, we have some teachers starting to do some blogging. So we're kind of at that point where we need to make some decisions about how we want to use it for its best efforts. We're on the edge of a lot of this stuff, so it's really new and exciting.
I don't know
which one to look at. Okay. Oh, you're looking at one there. Just looks like kind of like a web page. Oh, okay. Well, you guys can introduce yourselves too, because we just walked in with coffee. So, for those of you listening on audio, these are good people who have just walked in with coffee. How familiar are you with blogs, wikis, RSS, all of that kind of stuff?
Not very familiar.
Okay. And last but not You have to introduce. Stop giving out coffee and introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm John Kintillis, the tech coordinator for Bering Strait School District.
Great, thanks. So that was, I'm sure that wasn't for the benefit of the people in the room, but it was certainly for the benefit of the people on the audio. Okay, well, let's have a look at today's agenda now, see if it's changed. And let's see what we got. You still seem to be happy with blogging and all of that. Not really much, well, any changes. Thank you very much. I'm sort of bugged by that camera.
It's not that I'm bugged by the camera.
It's just while we were talking, I'm sort of sitting here and I'm thinking, what if there's people watching video and what they're seeing is me and a voice kind of off to the side? So, okay, well, let's give the camera see, the thing is, and part of the theme that I have for this week, because we're doing the session here, but of course we're recording it three different ways and all of that. The whole idea here is that we're creating learning resources as we're doing this. So, like, we have the people in this room, which is great, and but we'll also have, I don't know, three, four other people listening to this or viewing this at some point in the future online on the web. And so I'm trying to create that, I don't want to say churn because that's not quite right, but the idea is anything you do creates a learning resource. Anything. If you attend to that. And so that's what we're trying to do here.
So I know your audio recording and your video recording, what is the third medium?
Just the wiki itself. Very often that looks attractive. Very often I have slides, but I don't have slides today, so mostly it's the wiki. And I don't know, I guess if people were listening on audio, what they do is they go to the wiki and see what's there, and they follow along and listen and go to the websites and stuff like that.
But they'd be able to interact with the wiki too. Oh, so if they have questions, they could put them up there and not be just a passive audience, which is what we've always had.
Right, yeah. So if you're listening on audio or watching the video, change the wiki if it so strikes you. Now I don't want to walk in front of that anymore. Never look at your profile. So, okay. And what's going to make this a good learning resource, of course, is if all of you guys participate and I don't talk for, well, 6 hours, because nobody can handle that. So why don't we begin then with blogging, and I'm going to kind of settle in here a bit. I got my coffee and all of that. Oh, am I messing up the video? You see the top of my head? Okay. All right. How many of you have your own blogs right now? One. And you're writing it. Well, that's good. Okay, well, let's...
I guess I do, too, because I just plugged in the blogger and I've
got one. Oh, it does. Okay. This, and I know this is a pretty basic starting point, but this is Blogger. And Blogger has changed a lot of things. And what Blogger has really changed is... Now, in order for somebody to have their own website, all they need to do is create an account on Blogger. And creating an account on Blogger is ridiculously simple. If you haven't created one yet, and there's a few that have, I'd like you to create one now. And I want to step you through this. And the reason why I want to step you through this is so that you have the feel for this. Because this is the experience that many... maybe even most of your students have. They might not have Blogger accounts, but they'll have something very similar. And really, just click on the big arrow, choose a username, and pick a password. and then it'll make you fill out these other forms and accept the terms of service. You may or may not read them. I'll bet you about 1% of people read them, which is an interesting thing.
I always hope that I'm giving that my first answer.
Yeah. We'll tell them you said that. I was tempted to put terms of service on my website. You know, if you work for Microsoft and you use this website, you will go and open source all of your software. Well, I mean, they have terms of service. I have terms of service. I think that's fair. You might have to try a couple of different usernames because, I don't know, there are 10 or 15 million blogger accounts out there, so all the good names are taken. I don't think I... Oh, yeah. Oops, I guess you can't sign in blank. And as you go through there, you'll eventually get to a page. And I'm cheating. I'm just logging into my existing account. And it won't quite look like this. It's going to look a bit like this, except without all the entries. I'm assuming that's what you're looking at now.
As I said, that may take a while. It's just to keep the people who are watching the video on.
Has anybody read it big time?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, that's perfect. I always start with blogger. I think I start with blogger because it's so basic. Yeah.
I was blind using blogger. I thought it was having one topic digits is much harder than blogger.
Yeah.
Although, why did it start with
password? Password, yeah. I hate signing in and passwords and all of that kind of stuff. That's not part of the presentation today, but this whole identity thing is going to change a lot in the next 12 months or so. Because this, you know, there's so many of these different services that are all out there. We'll explore a bunch of them, and they all require a username and a password. Nobody can remember that many passwords. Not even me. And so there is going to be some type of single sign-on service that rolls out probably sometime in the next 12 months. There's a lot of discussion and debate about what that's going to look like. And actually, a little more accurately, there will be several single sign-on services. It's just that kind of world. And especially I've been seeing school divisions and universities and university networks and that where they're having single sign-on systems, but just for their own network or their system and things like that. Which isn't, you know, if you sign on into a network, okay, that's less signing on than you had to, but it's still not a single sign-on system because you can't use that same ID to get into Blogger or any of these other things. So we still need something more general. Yeah, they talk about identity federations. And the whole concept of a federation is you have to be in that network.
Yeah. once you've gotten in, and it's probably going to pop you into something like this. And let's la di da di da. And you've done the hard work now. So you give your post a title. And if you want a link, you just type out whatever the title will be and just click on that little chain thingy. And you're there. And you can publish it. You don't have to publish it right away. As you can see, you can save it as a draft, and that'll save your work, but it won't post it on your blog website. It'll take a couple of seconds, probably less for you than for me. And then once it's done, you can view your blog. And there it is. And here's the post.
If I was doing blogs and they had incredibly different subjects, or I had one that I knew was going to be specific, I'd do a whole separate blog, or do they have a way to separate it out within one account?
Yeah, you can have multiple blogs in the same account. And actually, if we look at my account here, we'll come back here, and let's see if I can find my account here. Back to dashboard. Yeah, you see, if you click back to dashboard, and this is where you normally, like the next time you log into Blogger, you'll end up on this page. And as you can see here, I've got a bunch of different blogs that I use for different purposes. And so the Yukon Mania, I actually created this when I was in Whitehorse. Is it not my first time up here in this part of the world? Well, I guess Whitehorse isn't really this part of the world, is it? It's close enough, though. Yeah, it's just down the road. Just a really long road. And so this is the blog that I use for sessions like this. And then Brad Jensen's posts was a nice little experiment where I captured the output of a mailing list. I wrote a little script that did that, and then had that send the posts to Blogger. And so that's what that is. Then he stopped writing, and they changed the mailing list, so it doesn't work anymore. I had it all automatic, so anytime he posted to this mailing list, it would show up as a post in Blogger. Half an Hour is my personal blog. Downs, I don't know what I use that for, and no.org, I don't know what I'm using that for either. I'm sure I'm using them for something, but I haven't used them for, well, like Downs, I haven't looked at since, well, more than a year ago. And the other one, even longer. But you can always create another blog. You just click create a blog, and here's the screen that you've already seen, right, with blog title and all of that. So I won't create another blog because I don't really need to. And of course, you have your own profile and all of that sort of stuff here. And the main point I wanted to get across with this first bit is that's all there is to it. I mean, you guys, I assume, have mostly or all successfully created your blogs now. Next time, if you went to Blogger, depending on whether you have your cookies set and all of that, it'll take you straight in there. You hit create a post, you just start typing, and you've added to your blog. And you're done. And this is really different from, well, even just a few years ago where, you know, you had to get a server account and learn HTML and all of that sort of stuff to publish a web page. It has become so simple now that absolutely anybody, even little children, in fact, these days, mostly little children can create and publish their own weblog. So, everyone successfully created a blog yet? Okay. If you click to the Yukon Mania site, and that'll be, I don't know why it's doing that, but the address is yukonmania.blogspot.com, and here it is. Now I'll get you to scroll down here, just where it says principles for evaluating websites. Whoops. And that's not what I wanted to hit. Oh, well, that'll do. Just hit on the comments thing here. And what you've got are, there's a whole bunch of blogs that were created by other people in other sessions that I've done. And what I'd like you to do is scroll down, post a comment, and give me the address of the blog that you've just created. What's the name of your blog?
No, because I created a whole new blog.
Okay. Well, any blog, I mean, I guess it doesn't have to be the one you just created, but... Okay, it'll be whatever the name of your blog was, .blogspot.com. Oh, yukonmania.blogspot.com. How do you go wrong with letters? And yet, every computer handles them differently. I don't think I could ever get used to it, but I like it.
You guys are all here posting that. Oh.
So much to be read by so few. Well, there's truth to that. See your comments coming in. Yeah. Blogs provide the author an opportunity to write and be read by others without the need for an editor or publisher, which is an excellent point. So, I'll take this stuff. Whoops. Try to take it all. And I love cut and paste. So that's why I like wikis. You just do that, right? You see something you like, cut it, paste it in, you're done. I even like the way it kept the font for me. Here's another site. How many of you are familiar with LiveJournal? If you have younger students, this is probably where they've created their blog, and not on Blogger. And I'd like LiveJournal. LiveJournal, it's funny, the demographics of LiveJournal, the average user is a 14-year-old girl, which is, it creates a very different sort of site. Now, I might be exaggerating. The last time I looked, the average user was that, but that may have changed a bit, but I doubt it.
We have a library listserv with about 11,000 librarians in it, and I'll tell you, LiveJournal is the one we hear about the most.
Oh,
that school districts are blocking.
Sure.
And I'm like, there's a whole lot of other stuff that's just like LiveJournal, but I never hear them blocking that. But LiveJournal, because it's not just 14-year-old girls, it's 14-year-old girls posting mean comments about other 14-year-old girls.
Yeah. And that's the question that does come up, right? I mean, there have been a lot of discussion about the way these kids use these blogs, and that's one of the things that does come up, is the whole phenomenon of cyberbullying and things like that. So, and the question that has to be asked, and I'm sure people ask it, is, you know, is the appropriate response to block access to them? And, well, you can probably guess my view on that. Because it seems to me, particularly as people begin to have computer access at home, blocking it in the school just blocks it out for a short period of their lives, but not for the whole thing, obviously. I don't know, your students, would they have computer access at home, typically? Some?
More and more.
More and more? Yeah, I would have thought so.
Might we have almost 90%?
90%?
Very correctly, as stated earlier, there are so many other sites besides Wi-Fi. You can't block them. Some districts have just taken the blocking any site with the word blog in the title.
My problem is if we block it for the school, we're worried that they're not going to use it. They can use it at home.
Sure.
Where is the we're in such a great position to teach talking about appropriate use and good ways, and by blocking it, we're giving up our responsibility.
Yeah.
Sorry,
the law here says you have to block access to music.
Well, we need that.
Can I actually clarify that? E-Ray, I believe, says you have to have a plan for monitored access to student use. But the same mental one, you have to be specific to plan in order to be E-Ray. So, you have to have software enabled block. It doesn't say you have to block. It says you have to have a plan for monitoring student use. You have to have filtering software in place or filtering plans.
But it's connect what you choose to filter.
Right.
It's up to your school site on what level they're filtering. And we do have to protect kids from there are things out there that kids shouldn't get to and they can get to accidentally, but the teaching tools they can get to.
It doesn't specifically block chat, it doesn't specifically block blogs or chat. You have, there's stuff on live room and stuff like that. Really.
I mean, I guess that's my perspective. I mean, almost no matter how much you filter, there is going to be inappropriate stuff that kids can get to. I mean, I think if they have internet access, they'll get to it.
The more you filter, the more they want to find ways to get to stuff that's not really
appropriate. Sure, of course, I would too. I'd be all over it. I like Live Journal because, I'm just trying to see, I'll log in now.
That's amazing.
236,000
posts in the last day.
Yeah. Slow day. It was a Sunday or a Saturday. I think this is right. I can never remember my... No. Oh, darn. I've forgotten my Live Journal access. It's just something silly like... Usually I'm fast enough on these things to get downs as a user login, but I was slow on LiveJournal. And so I didn't... Well, whatever. Never mind. As you can tell, I don't post to LiveJournal a whole lot. But let's just look at some.
In a session we were in yesterday, we were talking about, it wasn't about blogs, but we were talking about blogs and monitoring student use of them.
Yeah.
One thing that we have some teachers to do, and I don't know if others do that, but if they're RSS enabled, if you've got a feed aggregator like in Firefox, I have a feed aggregator, a thing that monitors the RSS streams that I subscribe to. So we have some teachers that actually use that to monitor student contributions to the blog.
Yeah.
It rolls, and all they have to do is roll over it. It pops up in the window, and they get a quick glance at it. But also, the same sort of thing also works if they use those blogs for assignments.
Yeah, see, you're ahead about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. I think that's worth pointing out that because of the way blogs are set up, it is very easy to monitor and to watch what the students are doing on them. So I'm just looking at random LiveJournal blogs. I like doing this. You should do this. And I know it seems sort of odd, like a total waste of time, right? You just sit there and hit random blog after random blog, but that's how you see. You know, so and here we've got this person here, et cetera, et cetera. I know I haven't updated, but I'm sick of this journal.
But the rest of it's interesting, too. She's not sick of journaling. I'm going to start off with a new journal.
Yeah. So, and you know, you really get, and this is what gets me, and this always gets me, every time I do this, like, how deeply personal these things are, and they're publishing to the entire world, but, like, look at this statement, right, this is the next statement, and it's from a while ago, last year, things are better now, but, you know, in a nutshell, I'd give anything to be happy right now, and it's like, and so on, well, there's the language thing, as usual, but and we move on to another person. It's just like that. It's also kind of weird that way, too. Cause the Yucatan Peninsula. So, and the thing with LiveJournal, too, and it doesn't always show up in all of the blogs. I'm looking for something where it shows up pretty obviously, but it isn't really showing up obviously. Individuals... Oh, sorry, the snail here just went moo. You see a lot of interesting stuff. Individuals, typically, almost all of them, have networks of friends. And so in LiveJournal, what you will get are these clusters of people, usually, but not always, from the same school or the same class or things like that. And so you get lots of comments from people, one to another. Now, how come I'm not seeing friends here? Oh, yeah, okay, we were just getting all the posts from this person's friends. And it's interesting, and I do this sometimes, too. Go to a random blog, check their list of friends, and then sort of look at all the blogs from their list of friends and kind of get a sense of how that interaction is happening. So, Archbishop of the Land of Me. And, I don't know, if you were a novelist or a writer, you could find a book a day, a book a minute almost, just reading these things. So, I can't really describe in a talk what it's like, what it feels like, and what the experience is like of looking through these things. But it is one of the things that I've done. I do it, and not all the time, but, you know, from time to time, just to try to capture a sense of it. And I really do recommend it.
The thing I like for kids on this is a lot of times when I'm reading different people's blogs, they'll realize that as much as we all want to be different, but when they, especially when they're sharing, and they do share a lot of, you know, a lot of their inner feelings on these, the kids realize that, yeah, but you know, hey, I'm not the only one who felt that way.
There was an interesting post. Uh, was it Dana? Oh, count on it. Kind of crossing a line? You haven't been exploring enough yet. You look at the language they just use, whatever. Sometimes the pictures that they post, the things that they say. I mean, any thoughts that kids, you know, even up here and everywhere else, are somehow on the straight and narrow because that's how they look like to you, forget it. I mean, the evidence is overwhelming that, well, by and large, they're not. I find that very interesting. This is a paper by Dana Boyd. He just published it a few days ago. He posted it on his website. I consider that publishing. Identity production in a network culture. It's about MySpace, but it could equally well apply to LiveJournal or even to Blogger. And what Boyd is saying here is that they're, you know, especially the younger people, but even older people, their online presence is a way for them of defining their own identity. And it's so in looking at these blogs and these blog posts, it's not so important to look at the specific things that they're saying, and now this is me interpreting a little bit on Boyd, but to look at the overall picture that's being presented. What sort of image, self-image, is a person creating online? And they're creating it partially for themselves, but of course they're creating it for the group of friends. And usually they'll share their blogs with each other. And so this is a persona that they're projecting in the world. And this is not a new thing. I began working with MUDs and online games, multiplayer role-playing games. And even back then, this whole idea of the use of this technology to project an identity and to try out different identities and see how they fit was well known. And if you look at Sherry Turkle's Life on the Screen, you'll get a sense of that as well. So I'm just going to post this link into the wiki, except I've lost my wiki. Oh, well, I'm not using Copenhagen. Quick. Anybody else added things? Nobody's adding things. I'm so disappointed. Pardon? Oh, we're going to get to that. But a wiki, the short version is, a wiki is a web page that anybody can edit at any time. And that sounds crazy and stupid, but it actually works. I mean, it's working right here. This course outline is on a wiki. So I'm just going to put this bit, maybe I'll put it. Now I've forgotten the blogs and identity. So I'll just toss that in here. Oh, page formatting, because I like page formatting. And we'll save that. Dollars because some kid swears on a web page, it just really seems odd to me. Especially since kids are going to swear on web pages, no matter what.
Well, sure. There's literally street celebrities from the web. I mean, if you have sex,
yeah. Is there any milk for this coffee?
Yes, there is.
Cool. Okay, here's where I express an opinion. Safari, other than Internet Explorer 2.0, Safari is the world's worst web browser. When I do page design and write software and that, I have a little slogan. Nothing works in Safari. Even using Apple, you should be using Firefox. Now, do you guys have Firefox on your...
I have them both, and to be honest, I use them both depending on what. Yeah. Firefox is great for everything out there, unless I need Java, and I have not found Firefox to work well with Java.
Nothing works well with Java either.
Safari works great with anything I need for Java.
That figures. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Yeah, no, I have my opinions about Java as well, and most of them are not good. I'm very opinionated about this stuff, and mostly it's just blind personal prejudice. But, well,
most of our computer, and I'm not sure I think these are our computers, most of you are using, but most of them share Firefox. We have found that the WYSIWYG editors and other open source editors like FSEK and the CML area and all that don't operate well with Safari. I don't recommend it either. I recommend Firefox.
It's because most of these things use JavaScript, and they use the document object model fairly extensively, and they use a number of JavaScript extensions. And Safari just is not standards compliant with JavaScript. It's not even close. You know, I mean, you can do simple JavaScript in Safari, but anything complicated is probably going to fail, which is really unfortunate. Internet Explorer is squiffy. Most things will work in the Internet Explorer, but you have to do it Microsoft's way. So if you look at you actually look at the code in JavaScript, the first thing you'll see at the top is detect browser. Internet Explorer do one thing, anything else do another thing. And yeah, designers hate that too.
I'll just
start
on
that. Yeah. Although I wouldn't use Internet Explorer for any reason. There's so many problems with it. And I haven't tried the new one that's just come out, the Internet Explorer 7. It is 7, right? I think it is. And I've heard favorable reviews, but, you know, Internet Explorer 1 through 6 treated me so badly. And then 6 was frozen when they had a monopoly, so until Firefox came along, I just had real no motivation to go to Internet Explorer 7. Why would I? The Firefox has always worked perfectly for me. Well, not perfectly, but pretty well. Now, these next two links here, Movable Type and WordPress, what these are types of blogging software, because, again, especially in schools, you're going to run into this situation where, you know, any blogging site out there is blocked. But you can install blogging software on your own local network or your own local servers. And Movable Type and WordPress are the two most popular blogging engines. Movable Type is commercial, and WordPress is open source. So naturally, I recommend WordPress. And the thing with WordPress, there are various things you can do, but when you go to it, here's the download, and I'm going to use the zip version. And so that's how long it took me to download it. Here are the files, and basically what you do is when you download it, you expand, or, well, put it on your server and expand these files. And WordPress is written mostly in PHP, and you can tell, you see the little PHPs here. And here's a little PHP for you.
which are you looking for? PHP is a scripting language, and the neat thing about PHP is basically you put it on your web server and it runs. You usually don't have to do much in the way of an install. Now, WordPress will require a database of some sort. Typically, people will use MySQL with WordPress. But the point here is that you can install WordPress on your... Well, I installed WordPress on my server. It took me about 10 minutes because I already had a MySQL database set up. So I just accessed that. But given that, it took me about 10 minutes to install and set up WordPress on my website. Then I never used it, but I have it. And you'll find out there that there is a large WordPress community. And so if you run into problems with your database or with your WordPress or anything like that, that you can tap into this community. Just click on support here. We'll see some evidence of that. Right? See all the discussions and all of that. And this is the big difference, at least in my experience, between using a commercial solution like Movable Type and using an open source solution like WordPress, is that the community is much more responsive and you get much more support with the open source, which is kind of contrary to what people say, right? You know, they say, you know, you want support, use commercial software, but my experience is that you listen to a lot more Muzak that way, but the support isn't there so much. That was supposed to be a joke, and I didn't even get a titter. Which? Oh, the Yukon Mania? Oh, there, downs.jot.com. Why not? Let's have a little fun here. I haven't installed WordPress for ages, so who knows what's going to happen. Okay, I'll need my better glasses.
So, my server is a Linux server, because that's the only system that I would use for a web server. So I'll go to WordPress, and I'll hit download. And because I'm using a Linux server, I'll download the tar.gz file. Or as you guys would say it, tar.gz. And I'm just going to save this to my disk. And I don't know where it's going to save. But and it's done. It took that long to download. And I wonder where it saved it. Probably to the desktop. Let's just minimize. Yep, there it is. Okay. Now, I'm going to open up an FTP client, if I can find it here. Anyone see my FTP client? I don't know whose idea it was to use icons on web page or on desktops, but for me, they're just the most miserable thing. I'm pretty sure I have an FTP client. Where?
WSFT.
That's what I'm looking for. Oh, here we go. Yeah. Duh. WSFTP was a fantastic little FTP client until I got the version that I paid for. And now it's a pretty mediocre FTP client. But it was so good for so many years, and then they improved it, and now it's not nearly the same. So I've connected to my website. This is on the right-hand side here. These are all the directories on my own personal website. And on the left, of course, is my local computer. So let's find that file that I just downloaded. And I know it's on my desktop, so I have to find my desktop. Oh, one more up. And keep going. Boy, it's being slow today. And there it is, WordPress, .tar.gz. Oh, no. I'm thinking about this because I need to expand it. Yeah, okay, well, I'm just going to upload it. It's not going to take very long. And do I have PuTTY on here? To access my website, I actually have to open up the VPN. This, I don't know if this will be the same for you guys or not, but it's a really annoying government thing. I hate all of this security. All of this security is so much of a problem. Are you guys all familiar with VPN? Yeah, it stands for Virtual Private Network, and basically what it is a security system that's installed on a network that doesn't allow an external user to access the network except under certain conditions. And it creates encryption so that your interactions with that network are secure. And of course, naturally, it creates a login. So we have another username and password to remember. So, I'm not sure, do your school divisions use VPN or anything like that? No? Okay. So, typically...
I don't know about Ted. Ted, do you guys use a VPN?
No.
So, typically... Yeah, typically you just ignore that and then open up. I'm looking for something now called PuTTY, which I can't find. My problem is I can't read my own screen. Does anyone see PuTTY here? Oh, this is ridiculous.
GameSpy,
yeah. I had PuTTY. Maybe I don't have it anymore. La di da di da. I used to have it. it's not a bad idea. I never think of using search. It's sort of funny, isn't it? Oh, let's do this the other way. Yes, there is another way. It's actually a bit more complicated, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to download the Windows, the zip version of it, and I'm just going to unzip it right here on my own machine. Oh, geez.
So Putty does is allowing to go up and expand it on the server rather than on
it. Yeah, I was trying to expand it on the server. So what I used to do, I just used to use Telnet. And Telnet would go in, it's like 2 seconds to open Telnet, and then you type one command, and it decompresses this thing, and I'm set, all set to go. But then they gave me web security, and now my life is miserable. Okay, so I've saved WordPress. So what I'm going to do now, I'm back here again. I want to expand it. Jeez. See, you can tell I never do this, right? Ah, for God's sakes. I've also improved WinZip. And now I can't figure out how to expand the thing. Let's try that. Okay. There we go. 6 minutes remaining. Yeah. I'll tell you, my view of this stuff, I wish they would stop improving software. Because every time they improve software... Well, this is a general principle. And you guys have probably run into this in your own work, you know, just the software that you use. Every time they improve it, it gets harder to use and doesn't work as well. And they have to stop doing that. Now, one of the major mantras that I've always had for development of educational software and educational resources is keep it really simple. And it's not, you know, it's not because users are stupid or anything like that. It's because if you make it not simple, it probably won't work. Or it'll work, but only under certain conditions. And the more features and things you add to stuff, generally, the worst
part of their drive to just have one product in any niche. For instance, all this right now, Adobe, they want one publisher. Uh-huh. So they don't want to support PageMaker and Design.
Yeah.
So they create an incredibly difficult one to use.
Yeah.
Because it'll serve everybody, but it doesn't serve all the people who want a simple publisher.
Well, that's it exactly. They want everybody to use that one product. They want that one product to serve everyone. Imagine you did teaching that way, right? You're giving a class, and the things you say will have to serve absolutely everybody at all times. You can't do it, which is why you sort of pay attention to different things at different times. All right, this has finally expanded. Now, what I'm going to do is, let's just check and make sure that I don't already have a WordPress directory here. I don't even know what directory I'm in. Because I think it changed directories on me. Nope, good. The old one was WP or something. So here's the directory I've just expanded. Now I'm going to upload it. This will probably take a few minutes. Get rid of that. Maybe it's going to upload that stupid thing. This is the FTP program that used to work brilliantly all the time, and now it always stalls and then dies. If you're from WSFTP and you're listening to this, please give me back my FTP client that worked. I will still pay you money. It's okay. I just want the old client back. La-di-da-di-da. Well, while that's going, how are we doing on time, by the way? Pretty good. 15 past. How's this session going for you guys so far? Okay. Just checking. You never know. You don't know till you ask. So while we're waiting for WordPress to upload, I want to point you to a couple of other things. One thing here is an article on educational blogging that I did, I don't know, a year and a half ago or so. And I think you'll find this useful, although now it's a little bit dated, but you know, anything that's older than 10 minutes on the web is dated. But just in terms of understanding how blogs can be used in the classroom, because there's a variety of ways that people use blogging in the classroom. Everything from classroom announcements and things like that, posting of assignments, through to providing resources for students, having a teacher's blog that the students would follow, that give them interesting sites and interesting things to look at, to having students use blogs themselves in order to complete and submit their assignments, or even just journaling or web writing in general. And a couple of major observations on this. One of them is that, you know, you get a new technology like blogging that comes along, and the first reaction that you see out there, especially among the evangelists, is something like, everyone should use this. And my own experience is I've never seen any technology at all ever that everyone should use. And I think the same applies for blogging. My perspective is blogging will work for some people some of the time. And for those people for whom it works, it's tremendously effective. But it's not going to work for everyone. And it's not clear to me that it should be assigned to everyone. And it seems to me that because blogging is so personal, we talked about my journal and my personal identity and all that, because it's so personal, if you make it required or mandatory, you're actually damaging what blogging is. It's almost like, you know, you're going in and taking control of their personal identity, saying, no, you will be like this. And so you're going to get pushback, and you're going to get people who, you know, may blog, you know, in the classroom, but at the end of the year or even at the end of the day, they'll stop abruptly. And there's been a number of reports out there with instructors using blogging where that has in fact happened. They get people blogging, but then they stop because they don't want to blog anymore because it's an assignment, it's a requirement. And it seems to me, and this is my perspective, that the value of blogging or anything like this comes if people do it on their own and continue to do it outside of class and indeed after school, after they complete school, so that it's an ongoing sort of thing in their lives. And there was a second thing. I wonder what it was. Oh, yeah. The second thing is a lot of people think of blogging and they think of blogging as writing, and blogging is writing, of course, and that's what we've seen so far. But in my view, the primary use of blogging, the major way blogging ought to be used in a classroom, is as reading. And I would never ask somebody to start blogging simply from scratch. Now, I say that just having done that to you, but we'll leave that aside. If I was introducing blogging in a classroom, I would have people reading first. And because if you think about it, well, you saw it, right? The blogger page, right? It's just this big blank window of where you're going to type something. And if you just put a big blank window in front of somebody and say, type something, people go, I have nothing to say. And of course they don't. Who does? But if they're reading, if they're looking at things you've recommended, if they've gone out searching, if they're following other blogs and things like that, that gives them a context. It gives them some purpose to write about things. And so you need to do the reading first. You need to explore what's out there, see what people are saying, see how people are saying that. And then when it's time, when they feel comfortable and feel a need to actually say something, that's when they can begin actually writing. And writing is the end point of blogging. It's not the beginning. It's what you do when you have to. You know, when you can't sit silently anymore, and you sort of go, now I have to say something because I've read all of these posts and they're just wrong. And who knows what they'll write about. But what they should write about is what interests them. What's important in their lives, in their community, and in their context. Now, a lot of people say, you will write a blog post about the War of 1812 or something like that. You guys call it that too, right? War of 18. Let's, Americans have different names for all the wars. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's for John.
Okay. Could be my 1 megabyte upload. Sorry about that. I just never think about these things. I mean, I'm good. Yeah, sorry. But, let's get rid of that. So anyhow, you'll find a lot of these observations and more in that article. Also want to point out this site here, which some of you may be familiar with, some of you may not be, called EduBlogs. And as you can see, here's somebody who's mastered the art of the mission statement. We provide free blogs for teachers, researchers, librarians, and other education professionals. It's created by a guy called James Farmer. He's based in Australia, and he's been working on this blog thing and all of that for a long time. He started very much in the same sort of situation that all of you guys are, where you know he's working in the educational system, and he's trying to bring some of these things on stream, blogging and other things, and naturally he found himself blocked. And so he set up this service for people in the education field so that anyone can create a blog.
And I'm assuming that because it's free, there's advertisements, so
no.
How does he pay for it?
The URL is edublogs.org. If you ask how something like this is supported, it's a very common model in the field of open source is that you provide a service of some sort like this for free, and that becomes almost like a calling card for you. And then the person providing the service then offers things like consulting, seminars, to go in and do installation support. In other words, all the support services around that. And they do that on a contract basis. So, and that's, well, that's my upload finishing. So.
Okay, so thank you, because I always wondered, you know, you have to figure out who's paying for it. If we're not watching ads, something's happening. So.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about that. And it's a hard road because, you know, it's hard to provide free services. The entire economy is against it, you know, and because people need to live. Now, if it was my ideal world, people wouldn't need to, you know, go out and work for companies or whatever to live. They'd get what they need to live, and then they could provide free services all they want. But yeah. Of course, they tried that. They called it communism. That didn't work so well either. Yeah, okay, well, they didn't really try it that way. Okay, so I've got my WordPress loaded here, finally. So, and here's the directory that it's in. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to look for my index file, index.php. And on a Linux server, you have to make sure that you have permission to run the file. Windows will just run anything. So what I'm doing.
If you ever cross with my arms crossed like that, I guarantee I don't have internet access.
Yeah.
So the cooks, I tried that.
Now, where? How come this isn't working? Operations. Looking for properties, or there we go. So I'm going to change the properties. I'm going to allow it to execute. Okay, so you notice what I've done, right? I expanded, and then I uploaded it, and then I changed it to execute. This should just run now. Because if it's, I don't have a web server running on my machine. Okay. On my server, I have a web server, and I have a PHP interpreter. And so what that is the necessary software to take these scripts and run them as computer code and deliver them as web pages.
Just real quickie, on EduBlog, one of the tutorials, the first tutorial is a 3-minute intro to WordPress.
Yeah, excellent. If you were actually to capture that link and toss it onto the wiki, that would be great. There doesn't seem to be a WP config. You know, it's working. It's telling me I need to create the... see? So it's actually working, but now I need to create the config file. And it needs that in order to know where to access the database and stuff like that. And it doesn't know, see, database name, username, all of that sort of stuff. So now it's just stepping me through this. And so, I wonder if it will actually just create it for me. It might. Let's try my... Okay, can't select, so, alright. So, I entered in the name of my database and the password, and it says can't select it. Okay, are you sure it exists? No, because I hadn't actually created it. Yeah. That's very nice. So what I'll do, I have a piece of software called PHP MyAdmin. This will actually access my database server directly. This is really useful. If you're working with databases at all, use PHP MyAdmin. So I'll create a new database, which I'll call WordPress. I don't know. It's an open source development project. I'm not sure who started it, but it just sort of started out there, and it was really minor. And then Movable Type changed their licensing, and that was a few years ago. And it was like the entire blogging community left Movable Type, and threw their support behind WordPress, and all of a sudden this really minor open source coding project became something really major. And it was literally almost overnight. Okay, now I've created my database. Let's go back here. Oops, I'm just trying to find my... Oh, here we go. Oh, right, that's what I did. So we'll go back, and we'll try it again. All right, Sparky, you've made it through.
Well, they really want to make you feel good.
Weblog title. What should I call my weblog? Let's call it Anchorage. And my email. I'll just put my regular email in here. Continue the second step. You know what I really like? You know how big those buttons are? I have no idea why people make tiny little buttons. It's especially for me, because my eyes are terrible. I hate tiny little buttons. I just love those great big buttons. All right, and now you see it's created an admin for me and a password. And so I just copied the password. And as always, the first thing you should ever do is change the password, but I won't. I'll just say, remember me. Actually, I probably will, but... And so now I'm logged in. And here's my WordPress installation. This is now running live on my web server. So let's write a post. And... La-dee-da-dee-da. I really should have changed my password, but oh well. It's actually already given me a post. Why is this taking so long? Maybe I'm caught in that other thing. I can close my FTP. Anyhow, while we're doing that, let's see. I'm a very impatient web server, and if one page isn't loading, I open up a window and try another page. Here's the weblog that I've just created. This Hello World is a default post that they put in for you. And you see here's the Anchorage is the title of it. It's already got a comment in it. It's going to be a default comment. But basically, you can see it looks and it pretty much runs the same as Blogger. How are we doing here now? Create new post. Here we go. Hello, Anchorage. Well, let's put an E on that. And just like Blogger, it's very simple. And we'll reload this, and you'll see my new post here at the top, eventually. Oh, I have to publish it. See, the interface is not quite as straightforward as Blogger. It's a little bit harder, but not much harder. There we go. And there's the post that I just created. So what you've seen, beginning to end, even messing around with stupid website security and VPNs and all that garbage, I have installed and now have running a version of WordPress on my website. And it took... Well, the actual install, once I figured out how I wanted to do it, the actual install took about 10 minutes. And I did it live in a session. That never works. And so, there's a lot you can do with WordPress. You can set up installations where you have multiple blogs. So you have one WordPress installation, and then you have 10, 15, 20 students or whatever, all accessing it. Because now it's on your server in your network, you can do things like password protect it, or you can make it invisible to the rest of the world. It doesn't matter, right? Any of the usual things that you can do to secure access so that it stays local within your school, you can do that. And all of the EduBlog stuff and you know the things, the information and services and that James Farmer offers are designed to help you do this. So you find out all the information you need on how to be able to do that from EduBlogs and from the people. There's a whole network of people now using EduBlogs. And so if you need advice and support, it's all there for you, which is good, because I don't know how to do half of this stuff, because I don't install multiple installations of anything, really. But that's okay. I don't need to know everything. Not today, anyways. You notice he's given up on the camera. I'm just teasing you. All right, let's do a little something for the people who are watching video. And okay, that's all. Well, what were you expecting?
Okay.
There are actually hundreds of educational bloggers out there and thousands of weblogs. Some of them are accessible through this educational bloggers network. I'm not really a part of this, and I see the most recent post is 2004, so I guess right now nobody is really part of this. That's too bad. This used to be good. But now it's just old. All right, forget that. Drop that from the list. Oh, well, I'm not going to go searching right now. There are hundreds of educational bloggers who are now no longer on the Educational Bloggers Network. I wonder what happened to it. Isn't that weird? This used to be good. Oh, well. If you just Google educational bloggers, we'll find something, I suppose. Here, again, is why I just love Firefox, because I don't really need to do anything. I have my little search there, and that just takes me straight into Google. Educational blogging resources, educational blogging, oh wait, that's just, never mind, that's just a link to the paper. Educational, oh yeah, I looked at this, why didn't I choose this? Maybe because this was old, too. I actually read some of the stuff. Yeah, here we go. This is current. So, educational.blogs.com. Maybe I'll just toss that into the wiki. And we'll get rid of that Educational Bloggers Network, because that really wasn't much of a link, was it? It is going slowly now, isn't it? All right, let's punt this. Captain Cook.
Knock it down,
man. Yeah. Well, the Captain Cook has mostly been working okay for me. I'm just, you know, and JotSpot is sometimes slow. That's why I don't use it all the time. You look at the stuff I do, and you'll actually see most of the stuff that I do is run off of my own web server. And the reason why I do that is because these hosted services sometimes slow down. It's like Google. Google launched, you know, a create your own web page service a few days ago, and it was just a matter of hours before they shut it down again because they got overwhelmed. Actually, it was kind of weird because I did sign into Google and started creating my own web page, and it said somebody else is editing this page. And what? I found that kind of strange. Yeah, so I changed my Google password. Now I can't remember it.
That's the other part of what's going on now. Now people have a list on their desktop.
Oh, sure.
Of all their packages.
Well, of course. It's like in our office, they have like this password generator thingy. Well, it's not really a generator, it's a set of rules. You have to generate the password. So you have to use numbers, you have to use uppercase things, it has to be 8 characters long, etc. It cannot resemble a word. So I do that, I generate the password, and create my password, and then 3 months later, the thing expires. And like, I created a password I cannot possibly remember, and finally when I'm beginning to remember it, it expires. So I'm not kidding, on my computer, in my office, there's one of those yellow sticky notes with my password. Because there's no other way. You know, I mean, the whole concept of passwords is you remember them. But if you set up the system as designed so that you can't remember it. The other thing, too, with these rotating passwords, they always set it for like certain numbers of months. And what that means is that when your password expires, eventually it will expire on a weekend. And of course, on a weekend, you're not at your office. You can't get access to go in and change your password, so you're locked out for the rest of the weekend. Very annoying. So if you're setting up rotating passwords, which you should, but if you are, set it up for weeks, not months, so that if your password expires, it's going to expire on a Tuesday. And there'll be computer support when your renew password thing fails. Because it will. It always does. Especially on a Microsoft system. Any changes to our page here? Oh yeah, okay, yeah, there's the tutorial and all that. Great. See, we're getting there. I'm just going to mention these and not talk about them a whole lot. Post, Nuke, Drupal, and Plone. And those are the three most popular. These are what are generally called content management systems. And what they are, if you will, is like blogging on steroids. Generically, these are online community applications. And if we can pop into Drupal, for example, and we'll see how quickly this goes. I'm just trying to find, here we go, let's pop into the demo. And what you'll see, and you see sites like this all over the web. And here's a demo of Drupal in action. And basically,
there are different ways that this works, but basically you have different types of content, you have screens. This is a really lousy demo.
Sorry, Drupal people, but this is a really lousy demo. Here's a site that does use... This is a better demo because I did it. This is a site called Our Media. It actually runs using Drupal. And this is very typical. Now, there's a lot of CSS in that style, the pages and all of that. Our Media was created by Mark Cantor, who's one of the people who founded Macromedia, and J.D. Lasica, who's very well known in the field of online journalism. And it's their project. My contribution to it was to create the design and the themes that work with the Drupal software. That's pretty much what I did there. It's been updated a bit. But the idea here is that you don't look into the... See, the idea is you have your own accounts, you have your own page, you can create posts, you can have multiple users on the one site, and there's an awful lot of content... content management features. And of course there's another login, which I may or may not get right. And I got it wrong, so I don't know what it is. Oh well, so you're not going to see it. Our Media in particular is a site that allows you to upload multimedia, video, animations, images, audio. And basically you can upload all the multimedia that you want for free, and then it's accessible to the rest of the world. It's a pretty useful service. If you have videos or something that you want to put on the web and you don't have a server of your own, you can use something like our Media. If you're creating school websites or things like that, or a division website or whatever, software like Drupal or Plone or whatever the other one was, PostNuke, these really are good tools to use because it means that you can create accounts and then allow different people throughout the school to be able to go in and edit different pages. And you can have people in the school upload announcements and stories and things like that. And, you know, when you have the whole school contributing to a website, it's a lot easier to maintain. You know, and obviously, there's always discussion about this sort of thing, right? You know, how do you make sure, you know, people don't upload the wrong stuff and all of that? You know, a lot of institutions have this idea that all content has to be filtered through some sort of editor and approved before it's posted. And I know why people would say that, but what you've done if you create something like that is you've just created a way to make it impossible to update your web server, because you've created this huge bottleneck and a whole pile of work. And if your website, your school website, is something that is run by the staff as opposed to, say, the students, although me, I would let the students do it too. There's a certain point where you have to have trust in the staff of the institution. And the web page, it seems to me, is one of those points. If you can't trust your teachers not to post inappropriate stuff to the school website, you know, it just seems to me that there are certain issues there that need to be dealt with, and aren't going to be dealt with simply by having an editor. So that's just my view. And the flip side is, if you're able to get that environment in place where people are contributing, and teachers and maybe certain students, then you get something that is very active, current, dynamic, a resource that students and teachers can actually use and use well. All three of these here that I've linked to, PostNuke, Drupal, and Plone, they are, again, open source software and therefore free. And Drupal, in particular, is a PHP script, and it will install for you using the same process and taking as much time as WordPress, the WordPress that I just installed. It's exactly the same thing. You upload, you start up the script, and it runs. And I think I might actually have one running on my own. I used to, but I don't think this is the right address. No, it's some stupid address, because Drupal went funny on me. This is really typical. I use Google to search my own website, because I can't remember where I put something. It's not going to find it for me. Hang on. Oh, never mind. It's there somewhere. The main thing is, it's, again, especially once you have your MySQL set up, it's incredibly simple to install. So if you guys are running web servers, school web servers, get MySQL installed. And even if you have to get one of your students to do it for you, sorry. Get that installed. That's the tricky part. MySQL is a pain. I'll say that right now. But once you've got that up and running, and then you can get PHP MyAdmin to give yourself good access to it, and then all of this stuff here that follows is incredibly simple to install and to use. And you get this enormous flexibility that you would not possibly have using the typical commercial software that you would have available. And the nice thing, too, about these packages is, because they're written in PHP, because they're open source, if you don't like the way they work, you can go in and change how the program works. And just, like, I have a wiki software running on my website, and I had problems with spammers. So I opened up the wiki software, and I tied it into my login system, so now you have to be logged in. And the thing is, you can do that. So, it took me an afternoon to do it. It was a bit of a pain, but it wasn't that hard. That's mostly because I don't know PHP. So I had to learn PHP, then edit my wiki file. So, it took a little bit more time than I had hoped.
That's my site for sure, but on my site somewhere is a specific Drupal installation. You're trying to catch my attention, aren't you?
I am. Just to interrupt, can I interrupt?
Can I say no? I'm just kidding.
You don't want to.
Just remember, if you're interrupting, you're still being recorded and maybe even videoed. We'll be sending those off to Washington later.
Just to let you know that, much like yesterday, you'll pick your lunch
up at Box Lunch Outside, and then Jason Olas from the University of Alaska Southeast is giving a talk called What's the Story with Digital Storytelling. It's going to be in the Adventure Room at 12:15, and if you want to read more about it, I'll just leave this piece of paper right here.
Thank you.
Thank you for letting me interrupt.
No problem. What time is it now, please?
About 10 to 11.
10 to 11. And lunch is at what time? I know you just said it, but...
It's 12:15.
Oh, okay.
The talk is 12:15. I think you break as well.
All right. Why don't we take 10 minutes now, because I need 10 minutes. And we'll get back together at 11, and then we'll pick up and do more. Sounds good? Okay. So those of you who are listening on audio... We will be breaking for about 1 second. Okay, so we're starting up again. And for those of you listening on audio, that was even a fraction of a second break. For us, it was about 10 minutes or so. And so we've covered less than half of our morning stuff, but that's okay. What's happened in the last year or so, maybe a bit more than a year now, is that all of these personal content production things have gone multimedia. And the first of these was Flickr. That was interesting. And I have the wrong link to Flickr, I guess. That can't be right. Did someone... It should be Flickr.com. So I have the wrong link in the wiki there. I don't know why. This is Flickr. And I'm just going to pop in and fix that link. Well, I can't just yet. I assume, how many of you are familiar with Flickr? Just a little bit? Flickr is great.
when Flickr first came out, I didn't like it. And I complained bitterly to them because their whole interface was all flash based, and of course so it meant it hardly ever worked on my own computer, but they've gotten rid of all of that, and now it really works well. And basically what Flickr is a place to upload your images, and so you naturally create a user ID, an account. So let's sign out here, and you'll see this page, you have signed out. Okay, so here's this handy link to the home page. Here's what it looks like if you just go to it and you're not signed in. And if you want to create a Flickr account, it's the usual process, right? You'll click on sign up, and you'll wait because everybody else has clicked on the same link. If you already have a Yahoo ID, because Flickr was bought by Yahoo, you can just sign in with your Yahoo ID. If you don't have a Yahoo ID, you just click on this sign up link. And so we've clicked on the sign up link. See, so the net result of Yahoo buying Flickr is it now takes 2 clicks to sign up instead of one. This is Flickr.com.
It's been changed on the...
Oh, did you change it?
We both did simultaneously.
Yeah.
But if you already have a Yahoo account, it takes nothing to... You don't have to sign up for it. So
that's right. Good. Yeah, well, that's the benefit. FLICKR.com.
When I go home, I
want to
be able to go here and
get something. Yeah, well, yeah, no, and I'm glad you did that because it means I don't have to do it. World's laziest presenter. So I'm in my Flickr account, and what I can do now is upload photos. And that's what Flickr's about, is uploading a photo. So I'm going to click upload, and I'll just browse and find a photo. Let's see if I can't find one of the Anchorage ones here that I just took earlier. And so it'll be my pictures, and it'll be in Anchorage, and here are my Anchorage pictures, and let's find one that's not sideways. Scenes of barroom debauchery. yeah, maybe not. You figure? So, okay, so I've picked my picture, and now I'm going to add tags for all of these images. So I'll put Anchorage. And basically what a tag is just a word that I pick. It's kind of like a keyword, except it's not a controlled vocabulary or anything. And what was the name of the bar? Darwin's Theory. I've forgotten how to put tags in, so I'll just... Okay, tag is a simple way for you to label photos so they are easy to sort and retrieve. There are no rules. That's why they're tags. Separate each tag with a space, or to join two words together in one tag, use double quotes, and that's what I was looking for. So, Darwin's Theory.
And then I don't think would you tag it with a... Bar.
What else? Mayhem. There are no rules. Alaska. Why not? And now I can make it either private, visible only to friends or family, or public. I'll make this public because I have nothing to hide. And now what it's doing is it's taking the photo off of my computer here, and it's uploading it to Flickr. So it's going to take a few seconds because it's a big photo. Oh, and I've forgotten. Is it one of the TIFF ones, too? It might be. Oh, well, we'll find out. Normally, the photos that you upload onto the web are GIF, or as they like to say, GIF, although I can never say GIF. It's just not right. Yeah. Or JPEGs or PNGs, and I think I may have just uploaded a TIFF file, but your photos have been uploaded now. It's going to process them into different sizes, and what Flickr will do is it'll create a thumbnail and slightly bigger, and then the great big huge file that you can download. And so that's going to take a few seconds because, well, it's fairly processor intensive. On my own website, I've written my own script to do this, and well, it's faster. But it's not as good. I mean, the Flickr will resize and give you good quality.
Can I search through Flickr for photos?
Yes, you can. And
even they're all Creative Commons licensed
now in Flickr. No, and that's what's going to happen now. So here's my photo has uploaded. Here's the title, and I'm going to give it a title, Darwin's Theory, and a pub in Anchorage. There's the tags. And so now I'm going to save this. And... I'm just looking for the place to edit this. See, now I'm going to click on it, and here's the page. Now, what I want to do now is change the rights. So you see here, the default in Flickr is all rights reserved. But I want other people to be able to use this and not just look at it. So I'm going to change that. So here's me changing that. And more options. And that's not it. Here we go. Add a license. It changes. These pages change if you don't look at them. And I'm going to pick attribution, non-commercial. This is a type of licensing, and it comes up later on in the session, although it's the last thing, so we might not get to it. What I've done is I've given this photo what's called a Creative Commons license. And what a Creative Commons license is, it's a way for me to share my photo so that other people can use the photo on their own web page or whatever, and they don't have to ask me permission. They just go ahead and use it. And so basically what I've done is I've created an open resource here. And then there are different ways I can do that. I can require certain conditions. And I've required that attribution, so that if they use the photo, they need to say it's by me. And non-commercial, which means, you know, Pepsi Cola can't take it and use it in one of its ad campaigns. People can only use it in a non-commercial setting, which usually typically includes an educational setting. And I could also pick no derivatives, which means if you use the photo, you have to use it as is. And you can't mix it with other things. And share alike, I could say, if you use the photo and you put it on your web page or whatever, then where you use the photo needs to be available under the same license that I've used. But I'm not requiring either of those. I think they're a little restrictive. I just don't want Pepsi to use my photo, and I'd like credit. So I'll save that. And now we're back at the photo. And these very drunk people. and actually, they had the Kiwanis police coming in and seizing money from us. So that's what I was trying to capture with this photo, but it didn't really capture. But you still get a pretty good idea of the place. And see, now if you click on all sizes here, you can actually see all the different sizes of the photo. And so there we have this very drunk person. Now, yeah, that's a good question. What you want to do is we'll go to the Flickr homepage, and what we're going to do, I think the easiest way will be to just search. I'm looking for the search link, and I can't see it because I can't see very well. Explore. Let's try Explore. Okay. I don't know why I can't find search. Why would this be hard to find? Flickr, people! About four down under Explore. So we'll click on Explore. I mean, how hard is it to just put a little search window on the top of your page? Here we go, photo search. Jeez, that's ridiculous. And of course, you know, if it's just flickr.com/photos/search, but why couldn't they just put one of these on the top anyhow? So, search with one or more tags, and here's where the tags come into play, right? So I'll search with Anchorage, because that's one of the tags that I used, and I'll do a search. And we're going to go a whole bunch. No, it hasn't picked it up yet. Yeah. That's interesting. It should have shown up, but yeah, Flickr must use an indexing system for their search. So it'll take a little bit to index. Now, you should be able to just find me, though. Let's look for people. And if you just search for people, just type in Stephen Downs, and let's see if that finds me. Yes, it does. So click people, type in Stephen Downs, and you should find my page there. And if that doesn't work for you, tell me. And then you'll see the Anchorage photo. Flickr is one of these free services that works on, I forget what the name of the model is, but basically it will provide you a certain amount of uploading capacity, and if you want more, then you pay them some money. And it's not that expensive. I'm considering it. Some people I know. The thing is, I have my own website with almost unlimited capacity. So for me, it's there's less of a need. Although, you know, my job may not last forever. And so if I ever found myself, if I had to pay for my own web server, I would almost certainly be using something like Flickr to upload and store my photographs. I think there's no question about it, because photographs are so big. And the way Flickr works is interesting. You don't have an upper limit in the amount of stuff you can have on your Flickr account, but what it does is it limits you to a certain amount of uploading per month. It's, I don't know, a gigabyte or something silly like that. I haven't even checked. So any given month, you can upload a certain number of photos, or actually a certain number of bytes. And so I think that's pretty useful.
Searched up your subject, what you were finding were photographs that are tagged Steve and Dennis.
And mostly those are other people's photographs of me. So, which would make sense, right? Except they don't. There are actually more photos of me on Flickr than just the ones you found, but they haven't bothered to tag them with my name. Go figure. And again, like, what I really want to stress here, and this is important, this is so easy. Right? I mean, if you were watching before, let's go from utterly nothing to photograph on Flickr. So here I have my digital camera, and I'm going to turn it on.
We are wondering what the little tiny tripod helps with.
I'm very detailed in my instructions, you may have noticed that. Okay, yeah, so I have it on the little tiny tripod, and I'm actually going to set it to delay. And aim it at myself. I'm just trying to make sure that I get pretty good. Zoom that in a wee bit, because I want the good parts of me, and not the less good parts of me. And now it's on a 10-second delay, so I can sit down here. How does that look? Find it all. Okay, that was a bad one.
That was a practice one.
That was a practice one. Jesus, that ugly. Wow.
We got the haunted suit now.
I hardly ever use Flash when I do digital photographs. Yeah, I think that'll be better.
There you go.
That's a good one? We got the thumbs up. Alright. So, that, again, that was the hard part. And, oh yeah, that's not bad. I got only the good parts. Rock and roll. So, I'll turn off my camera. And a lot of these digital cameras, you can use the little cables, but I always lose the little cables. So what I bought is one of these 8-in-1 card readers. I actually bought it in Vienna. didn't tell anyone, but but you can find these all over. Actually, the newer computers, they have them built right into the computer, which is kind of neat. So I'll just plug this in and toss my card into it. Card readers are totally the way to go. These little flash memory cards, I just love them. I forget about discs and DVDs and CDs and all of those really not so good storage media. So, and here it is. And here's the bad photo, which I'll delete. And here's the good photo. And now, actually, strictly speaking, I don't even need to remove it from the card. I'll pop into Flickr now and upload. And I'll browse. And the thing is, I can browse right on this thing. And so there's my photo. I'm going to upload this. I'll tag it Stephen Downs because nobody else does. Anchorage. And, oh, wait, let's put that in quotation marks. And for the other people who just tag it Downs, I'll just tag it Downs. And I'll make that public. I'll upload it. Now it's going to take a few seconds to upload. La-di-da-di-da. La-di-da-di-da. See, most of the work involved in this is waiting. You know, and that's just because we don't have the bandwidth. At home, I have broadband, and it actually uploads quite a bit faster. I would never be without broadband. I gave up on dial-up, well, ages ago. Actually, 98 was when I gave up on dial-up, and I've used broadband ever since, and it's a totally different internet experience. So we're waiting. And still waiting. Oh, yeah, okay. It's just, it may be more reliable, but it's hidden, and I don't know how to type it in to find it, so. Me, private networks, bad mix. So I'm just going to go back to, while that's uploading, I'll just go back to downs.jot.com. How are we doing here? Photos, and now it's processing it into different sizes. Notice that you can see the little tiny thumbnail there. It's very cute. Probably the first thing it did. Here we go. Here I am. Save that. Actually, that came out pretty well, eh? It's still a little off, but yeah, well. See, he's got a good camera. That's not bad. No, I don't think so.
It says taken with a Nikon
E4300. Obviously it does then.
Her picture say another camera.
Yeah. I guess it does. Yeah, it's pulling information out of the file itself. And In learning, you'll probably hear people talk about metadata and all of that sort of stuff. This is how to do metadata, where you don't do the metadata, right? The software does it for you. I didn't even notice that it had, taken with an Nikon E4300. And, like, I didn't even think about that. It just found that and did it for me.
If you look under more properties, it has a ton of information.
Yeah, let's check this out. Yeah. Oh, yeah, look at that, the resolution and all of that sort of stuff. Oh, geez, yeah, they wanted a photo of me in Tennessee at 300 dpi. I can send them this. Good. Look at all that stuff. I'm surprised there isn't some Japanese in there. The quality, white balance, sharpening, all of that stuff. Light source, exposure bias. Stuff I didn't even know. Flash did not fire. That's because I didn't want it to fire. I don't like using flash. I say that as he's busy taking flash photos. So, but you see how simple that is, going from nothing to now a resource, and I'm just going to change the rights on this, to a resource now that I am sharing with the rest of the world.
Yeah, did they find that fewer people put a, do people change their licensing often, or do a lot of people just keep them and say, oh, no,
a lot of people don't bother to change it, but a lot of people really do, and I'm just looking for the search page here. Explore Creative Commons, and this will give you an idea. Okay, here are the different licenses. Just the plain attribution, there's 869,000 photos available. Attribution no derivatives, 250,000. Attribution non-commercial no derivatives, that looks like 2.5 million. Attribution non-commercial, which is what I used, 1.17 million. Attribution non-commercial share alike, 2.5 million. Attribution share alike, 645,000. All of these photos you can use.
And you can only have one licensing on a per photo.
Right.
There's no reason to have more than one.
Yeah, it'd be kind of weird having more than one. Yeah.
Okay.
So, now think about this. Right? So schools, educational institutions that go out and buy image libraries. And we're moving into an era now where you don't have to do that anymore. You come to Flickr and you find it here. And if you want to search for something, we'll pop back to the wiki here. I've got a link. I had a link. Oh, maybe I don't. Oh, it's down here. In Yahoo and Google. Yahoo and Google provide a search on Creative Commons. This is the Creative Commons version of the search, but in either Yahoo or Google, if you go to Advanced Search, you can also access this. So let's do a Yahoo search for me. Find me works. Okay, and now any works that are out there under Creative Commons. Let's see if I'll show up anywhere. I don't usually use Yahoo to do searching, but I thought I'd do something different. Well, look at this. Look at all the Creative Commons resources that have to do with me. And I can go back and I can do the same search with Google, which is a little more familiar an environment for me. All of these things are Creative Commons resources, which means you can use them about me. And if you don't want me, you just want, I don't know, whales. Let's search for whales. Here are all kinds of free things you can use about whales. And this should work. Huh. No, that can't be right. Oh, well. Yeah, but I thought it would do images with Creative Commons, but for some reason, either moderate safe search, which is...
So there's just sexy pictures of whales in Creative Commons.
It looks like it. I don't know why that's... There's got to be some pictures, Creative Commons pictures of whales. We'll go back to Flickr and see any of these two, right? These licenses and that. I'll pop into one of them. And I can search on the specific license. Maybe if I just search for whale, I'll get a better result. Yeah, look at all these whales. We got whales coming out of our ears. We got belugas. We've got more belugas. Lots of belugas. That looks more like a shark than a whale. So if you wanted, if you were doing a web page or something like that, and you wanted a whale because you want to show your students whales, here are free whale pictures. And I don't think this will work, but I'm going to try it. Copy image. Can't do that in Internet Explorer. Actually, I don't think this will work, but I'm going to try it anyways. Because, hey, you never know, it might. And pop into Blogger. La-dee-da-dee-da. Why is it going so slow again? And Yukon Mania. And create a new post. This again, this probably won't work, but it's not even giving me. Nope. Alright, let's do it this way. Here's my Blogger thingy, and here's my other thingy. This might work. I don't really like that picture, though. This is silly. I'm being careful about what picture I use. Let's see if I can drag it. Yep. How's that? I just dragged it from the Flickr page. I've dragged it, and now it's in my blog post, and I'll publish the post. And so now what I've done and I'll just reload that. And there's my whale picture. My Creative Commons whale picture. As I say, I just dragged it and dropped it into Blogger, published the post, and now I have a whale picture on my blog. And a picture that I'm freely allowed to use. I'll never get in trouble with the copyright police. And what I've done is I've completely bypassed image publishers, content publishers, all forms of web services, anything commercial, and it's all legal. And so I look at something like this and I say, why would anyone pay for an image library anymore? Yeah. And it's funny because I think of Bill Gates. And Bill Gates, of course, has this vault of images underneath his house or whatever, and he bought Corbis, which is this image service that you may be familiar with. And he spent all this money investing in this digital image content, and yet the people of the world, if you will, have completely bypassed that. And we don't need that anymore. And that's the new model. That's the model that I try to talk about. And we go from very simple creation and easily accessible online tools. Flickr is just one, and there are other image library services available. And again, I don't have software off the top of my head, but I'm sure it exists. You can set up the same sort of thing on your own school web server. There should be some sort of software available. If not, if you're searching for any, you can't find any, send me an email, because I've written some, so I just haven't shared it. But my own image gallery that I have on my own website is software that I wrote. And basically, I do the same thing. I select the post, or select the image and upload it. I don't have nice drag and drop like that, though. These are the sorts of things, too, that, you know, your students can get really creative with. because, you know, digital cameras are cheap. Well, maybe not his, but, you know, and increasingly you're finding them on things like cell phones and all of that, or you can use a webcam as a digital camera, and you can create these things, you can edit them fairly simply. I use a program called PaintShop Pro, which I think it costs about 160 Canadian right now in the stores. I used the trial version of that for many years too, but then I finally broke down and bought a copy because I really thought I should. But you can use like Adobe Elements or any of these things to edit your photos, or you can use nothing at all because the camera takes perfectly good photos. But the nice thing about the editing software is you can crop your photos, change the color, you know, mix and match, create collages, all of that sort of stuff, all the things that people do. And you probably have image editing software kicking around in your schools. If not, you'll probably want it. But all of these things that the students can do, they can just make their own photos, upload them to their blogs, and be very expressive in that way. And if you see their blogs, you see they're already doing this. Now, everything I've said about photos Everything I've said about photos is now also true of audio. And all under the heading of podcasting. Podcasting isn't audio specifically, audio isn't podcasting specifically, but these days the two are almost interchangeable. And basically, what's happening out there in the world is people are creating audio files and maybe editing them, maybe not, and uploading them and sharing them. And in fact, this is what I'm doing right here. I'm recording this session on a program called Audacity. And you guys should have Audacity on your own computers there. And so if you want to record audio, you can do that. There's some headphones and mics there. Do you have Audacity on your computers? They do, right?
I believe they do. It was even at the beginning of the day, which computer to go into which room. So if
okay.
Download it.
Sure. Audacity is open source software. Oh, I didn't ask you to install Lame with it, did I? Oops. Lame.
It was easy to install Lame.
Yeah. The audio on the internet is almost entirely in MP3 format right now. It just kind of happened. Nobody planned it. It just happened. And so when you create an audio file like this in Audacity, then you need to export it as an MP3. And that's basically, Audacity will put it into that format for you. But in order to do that, it needs a plugin, I'll call it a plugin, called Lame. And Lame, it's interesting, it stands for Lame Ain't an MP3 Encoder, which it most manifestly is, because that's what it does.
Anybody wants to experiment at all with some headsets with mics and stuff? So USB.
But as you can see now, again, think about how simple this is. Think about how simple it is for me to be recording this talk. Right. All I did is I plugged in my microphone. Now, I got myself a good microphone. This cost me $110 Canadian dollars, which means in U.S. dollars it's about 27 cents. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to mention the name of the company that produces this because they have been putting viruses in people's computers recently, and I'm mad at them. I guess you can figure out who they are now. Well, actually, these days you can't. Could be any company out there. But the idea is get a decent microphone. And then all I did is I started up Audacity. I clicked on the big red button, and now Audacity will just sit there and happily record until my disk is full. And the way it does that is it doesn't try to record it all as one great big file. It just creates little tiny files. It creates a whole bunch of little tiny files and organizes them as a project. And then when I go to create an MP3 file, it'll take those files and create my big, massive MP3 file. And that's what it'll do after I'm done here. I'll just click File, Export as MP3, and it'll do that for me. And then after that, there's a wide variety of things you can do. And I want to point you to, here, for example, is a site that was created by the people who created Blogger. That should tell you something right off the bat. Called Odeo, and Odeo makes it even simpler for you. Now, I'm not going to click on these because I don't want to interfere with my Audacity recording, but it will let you create recordings from your browser. And you can share it, you can publish it, or you can find out what other people have done. It's audio blogging. And the way this works, the way these things usually work these days, and there'll be other things come along in time, I'm sure, but I really should click on, okay, I can't click on that to verify it. Well, maybe I can. I can go in one page at least. Yeah, maybe not. Okay, I'm going to be careful about that. But basically, software like Flash and that can access the input from your audio, your microphone, or if you have a webcam, it can access the video from your webcam. Now, Odeo is an audio service. But if you do a search on Google for VOD casting, VOD casting, and I'll actually do a search for that right now, you can pretty much do the same thing with video. Yeah. Okay, we got the Wikipedia article. Finalist, how to create a vodcasting. The technology behind is the same magic as da-da-da-da-da. So, and there's more and more of these things coming on stream all the time. And it's going to be a little bit slow. But the idea is, you know, if you've got a microphone, you got your camera, you just record. And a service like Odeo or whatever, yeah, this is July, so it's a little bit old. But there are, I'd have to look for them, but there are vodcasting services out there that work pretty much like Odeo, where you just record your camera. And it's you doing whatever with your video camera. You upload it. It's simple. It's so simple. And even better, it's all free. You don't have to pay for any of this. And, of course, with the podcasts and with the vodcasts, there is more and more, over time, free content coming available to you. I've got a link here. This is a pretty good link. It's down here. PodSafe Music Network. Now, suppose you're creating a video, and you've maybe recorded some video off your webcam or whatever, and you want a nice soundtrack to that or whatever. Or suppose you're creating a podcast, an audio recording for some of your students. You want some background music that you can use. And you don't have to pay the music publishing companies a whole bunch of money or your firstborn. You go to the PodSafe Music Network, and you find music you can use for free. And there's piles of really good music. And the thing is, this is new, so the selection is still limited. It's still like only in the thousands and thousands of tracks that you can use. Imagine this in 10 years. There will be millions of tracks of all sorts. And, you know, I sort of sit there and I look at the recording industry and all the things that they're doing. You know, they're suing people who are sharing music files and that. What's happening on the web is we're bypassing that. Because we can create, record, upload, and share our own music, and we don't need the music publishing industry anymore to do this. And because we're doing it, we just upload it for free, we let anyone use it, because we know that if we share, other people share, we all have all of this music we can use. And you can use it in your schools. Or your students can record. Or you can do things like this, where you're creating learning resources just by doing whatever you do during the day, because it's so easy. It takes almost no effort to do it. There's a lot of this happening in the schools now. I like to refer people to Bob Sprankle's site, room 204 or something like 208. And he's been doing this for a few years. And he has members of his classes make podcasts. And so we get the Room 208 podcast and PBN interview with Sarah Nix. I don't know who Sarah Nix is, but I'm sure it was good. And of course, in our field as well, there are a bunch of podcasts dedicated to educational technology. This one is called EdTech Talk, and this is an international effort. It's run by Dave Cormier, who lives in Prince Edward Island, and Jeff LeBeau, who lives somewhere in the U.S. I don't know where. Sorry, Jeff. and another person. I'm really terrible with names. They've got a really nice setup. What they do, and this is more involved. They work through a site called World Bridges, which they've set up. And what they do is they go on the air live. And they have people call in. And so they're broadcasting live. People are listening to the audio as it's being recorded. They can comment in a chat area, just a general open sort of discussion area. And then those live broadcasts are also recorded, of course, and uploaded as podcasts, which can then be saved. It's so good. The EduBlog Awards last year were done that way. And so you had people coming in and coming out and all of that. And they're able to use Skype, and I'll talk about Skype later on, so that people at their computers using their microphones can call into the show and just be part of the show. And a lot of the stuff that they use is free. So their overhead isn't that bad. From the JotSpot wiki, I clicked on Bob Sprankle. The original page that we started from? Here's another one by four people in Saskatchewan called the EdTech Posse. There's lots of posses and crews and camps and things like that out there. And what these guys do is they use, well, not this, although this would work, but they use an iRiver. The iRiver is slightly better than the Creative. The Creative will record. I've recorded quite a number of things using this. The iRiver, though, actually has a microphone jack in it, so I can take this microphone if I wanted. And so I have this real nice microphone I can record right on the iRiver. And so they just take the iRiver and the microphone, they plopped it in the middle of the table, and they have the conversation. You can see the conversation that we had there. That was when I was in Regina. And that's how they created their podcast. And then they just uploaded it. Well, they cleaned it up a bit and uploaded it. I never clean up my audio. Sorry, people. But they did. And that's it. iRiver costs, $250, $300 Canadian. So they're very cheap. All of these things are cheap. Everybody's buying iPods these days, but I wouldn't, because I want the MP3, because I want people to be able to hear the stuff that I record. And I don't know. I have too many problems with the iPod. That's just my view. Sorry, Apple. I just feel that way. So, okay, we've got about 10 minutes left. Okay.
Embarrassing album purchase
so I don't have to listen to the whole podcast. Bay City Rollers. Yeah. When I was 16, I went on a tour of England and Scotland, and it's kind of funny because, you know, you convert your money and then you go to England. Well, I was there for 2 weeks, and the pound dropped like something like 30% while I was in England. And so there was no way I was going to convert the money back and take a straight loss. So I started buying things, anything, including a Bay City Rollers album. But I liked them, you know, SATURD. I was 16. I was in Scotland. What were you going to do? And I bought lots of stuff. I even still have some of it. Not much of it. Mostly I just have the pictures, which is kind of funny. Flossie Posse is... FLOSSE stands for Free Libra Open Source in Education. And they're actually a group of people in Finland, Timu Arena and various other things. I've done a bunch of things with them. And they're very good as well. Mostly it's a blog, but they've done quite a number of podcasts and other sorts of things like that. So I like to link to them. I think I'm going to stop it here. After lunch, I want to talk about RSS, because all of this stuff is like the content creation site. RSS, how many of you are familiar with RSS? Oh, good. Even better. RSS is where all the magic happens. And in my view, it really is magic. I mean, all of this stuff is really powerful enough. But when you take it and you combine it with content syndication, you get something that just reshapes any ideas you had about what online content is like and even what online learning is like. So why don't we take our lunch break now, and then whenever we come back from lunch, I don't know when that is, but I assume someone will tell me. We'll pick up with RSS. I want to talk about RSS, social networking, social bookmarking, and all of that stuff. And that'll move us through to the end.
I believe lunch is at 12 to 1.
12 to 1? It's such an odd time to start.
Or 103?
Yeah. So I'm assuming it's just about 12 now.
It was
about 10-2. Tough, we're stopping now.
Have you seen this?
What is this? Oh, yeah, okay. No, I haven't.
Put it onto his...
Sure.
I'll put it up
there. Sure.
So then you just take it out.
I love that.
We have our spelling too, which I'm assuming that the young kid who won
our
district, so I can't
remember.
See, I
look at this, and I see all these things that they do, but why do you need a local newspaper and television station anymore? Your students could cover the whole city, except maybe the crime scenes, but you know...
They did too.
Yeah. Well, because they were there. I'm just kidding. But I mean, like...
That's
being
actually nicer
so...
Yeah, but it just kills me. We just don't need all of this stuff anymore. Okay, audio people, we're signing off. And so we're actually going to move to a new file. So this is Anchorage1.mp3, and if you want to pick up after lunch, the file will be Anchorage2.mp3, and it'll be located on your website, probably right next to Anchorage1.mp3. So thanks a lot, and we'll see you all later.